I posted the worst video. Like, I watched that video today and I'm like, I don't even understand why this had any views on it. And it got 2.5 million views. And basically also, like, I posted the video before I launched the website. So I put in my, like, link in bio, I put, like, leave your email here for when we launch. And we got, like, 30,000 emails.
We love innovators on this show, and today you're going to meet the woman who wowed not one, not two, not three, but four dragons on Dragon's Den with her creative, brilliant, and market-disrupting invention. Joining me on Sound Advice, Entrepreneurs Unfiltered, we have Kiana Gomez, founder of Cocktail Bomb Shop. She came up with the idea during the pandemic. It's a nifty little ball that you drop into sparkling water to create a tasty and refreshing cocktail. She put a video up on TikTok showing these little bombs in action and reached 500,000 views overnight. Still just 24, she's going to tell us how she built a business from her kitchen table, literally, how she harnessed the power of going viral, how she funded her startup, and what she's got planned for the future. Welcome, Kiana.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. I can't wait to hear this story. Do you want to just start off by telling us why cocktails? Why was that the idea that sparked this great invention? What's so great about cocktails?
Yeah, so to be honest with you, I never really had a plan to start a cocktail business. It kind of just, like, evolved into the Cocktail Bomb. Pretty much when the pandemic hit, I was in university in journalism, and I was also working at a soap store at my local mall, which surprisingly used to sell bath bombs, funny enough. And then after I lost my job, I had no more revenues and I need to make some money. So I always had a passion for baking and cooking. So I decided I would start making custom cakes from my house. So I started cake decorating and there were just cakes everywhere. And then I started to sell them on, believe it or not, Facebook Marketplace. And people were actually buying these cakes. I was getting a ton of orders, but to be honest with you, I really wasn't making any money. It was more of a passion project than anything else. So I knew I needed to find something. So a friend of mine sent me a viral video for hot chocolate bombs. For those of you that aren't familiar with those, they're basically these balls of chocolate where there's marshmallows inside and hot chocolate powder. You put them into warm milk and they melt and they make you a hot chocolate. So my friend said, try making those. These are so popular. I'm like, okay, let me try. So I went to the store with my boyfriend. I bought this huge bag, $60 worth of chocolate. And he was like, why are you buying all this chocolate? No one is going to buy these things. And I was like, let me try. Let's just see what happens. I go home, make some hot chocolate bombs, and I put them on Facebook Marketplace. I made a website too on Shopify. I put them on Etsy as well. And overnight, we started selling like crazy. Long story short, from November up until Valentine's Day, we sold 12,000 hot chocolate bombs, so about $60,000 worth of product from my kitchen. And at that time, I had my mom helping me, my boyfriend's mom, my friends, just everybody was making hot chocolate bombs. Like, it was crazy. It was full of chocolate everywhere. And then after that, Valentine's Day, the business just, it completely died. Like it was over. So I was a little bit sad, to be honest with you, because at that point I thought I had a business and I need to find something else. So I was like, I don't want to go back to cake decorating. So I started to look online and I saw a bartender that had made a edible bath bomb for a Patron special event at one point, just as like a one-time thing. And I was like, that's kind of cool, but like, you don't know how to make these things. Like, it's like how do you even do this? So from my own kitchen, once again, I started prototyping. I started trying different recipes for like about a month. They weren't all good. A lot of them were fails, but I just kept trying and trying. And finally, I found the idea for the cocktail bomb and I had my final prototype. So it's kind of like the evolution of how I got to cocktails was like just like a bunch of things that happened and like me never giving up. So yeah, that's pretty much how I got into the cocktail space.
And were there parameters you set when you were looking for a business idea that would work? Did it have to be kind of long shelf life, easy to post, so it has to fit through the mailbox? Were there sort of like things that you had on your tick list that you had to meet for it to be the right product?
Yeah, so one thing that I really wanted was something that didn't break during transit, because what I learned from the hot chocolate bombs is that it's a real disaster to ship chocolate. It breaks, and then you get a high amount of refunds, and like you have to give them, you have no choice if the product breaks. So I really wanted to find something that wasn't breakable. And also, as probably many of you know, when you're shipping a product, like, you want to make sure that it doesn't weigh too much, or else like all of your margins are going to get eaten up by shipping costs. So the cocktail bombs were perfect for that sense.
That's amazing. So how did you fund the early days of the business? Because were you just basically reinvesting all the profit from the hot chocolate bombs into the cocktail bomb business? Was that your seed capital?
Yeah, so I think I got like I was pretty lucky, honestly, with the way that like things kind of evolved. So as I was saying, I got that $60 bag of chocolate that I kind of see as my initial investment into everything. Then from that, we made like $60,000. That wasn't all profit. I'd have to check what my profits were on that, but it was pretty high. It wasn't super low. And then after that, like for the prototypes and everything, I just kind of took that money to start prototyping, but it wasn't much, like maybe like, well, there was a lot of time involved, obviously, like maybe like not more than $500 to $1,000 of ingredients to experiment. And then the first day when we launched Cocktail Bomb Shop, here I think was a blessing. We were able to sell for $20,000. And at that point, my expenses were pretty low because, basically everyone in my family was working for free. So I was able to really like take the capital from the first day and reinvest it into the business.
And how did you, I mean, you sold the hot chocolate bombs on Facebook Marketplace, but did you do the same route to market with the cocktail bombs to kind of test the water to see if people were interested, or did you go straight through a different marketing channel?
Yeah, so selling on Facebook Marketplace is really a disaster for everybody that wants to sell on Facebook Marketplace. It's like, I mean, if you're selling your old couch, it's a great place to sell it. But like to start a business, like it's not serious. You have people texting you at all hours of the day. Meet me here. Bring me this now. Calling you, texting you. Okay, meet me in this parking lot. Like, I feel like you can't grow. Yeah. So I didn't want the cocktail bombs to be a Facebook Marketplace product. I really wanted it to be an online store. And I mean, I thought in my head, like, if my online store doesn't work, I will sell them on Facebook Marketplace. Like, it was kind of like my backup, but it wasn't an avenue that I wanted to take initially, just because I feel like it's not serious.
No, that makes sense. And what about, how did you win your first customers then? Because at least if you're on Facebook, as you say, it's a disaster, but there's a captive audience already there. Whereas when you start a website, no one knows you exist yet. So how did you get those eyeballs?
I didn't know how I was going to get them initially. But a friend of mine, the same one that told me about the hot chocolate bombs, told me about a great platform called TikTok, where you could get a bunch of people to see your videos for free. And I was like, okay, let me try. I posted like the worst video. Like, I watched that video today and I'm like, I don't even understand why this had any views on it. And it got 2.5 million views. And basically also, like, I posted the video before I launched the website. So I put in my like link in bio, I put like, leave your email here for when we launch. And we got like 30,000 emails. So I kind of started with like a huge email marketing list. And also like, I kind of like, I was able to really like leverage the power of like social media, to start my business.
That's really interesting that you had the email marketing like approach, because too often we hear from small business owners that have tried TikTok and had loads of views, but they haven't been able to convert any of that into actual sales. So people enjoy the video, but they don't go and buy. But it seems like because you're able to reach out to them separately, that's how you do the conversion.
Yeah, so like I would say the fact that we put the email page to start the business was really smart, because I think if we would not have done that, and we wouldn't have gotten like people excited about a launch for the product, we just would have gotten tons of views and no sales from it. But I mean, now today, actually talking with you, I'm realizing I should maybe find a way to incorporate email back into my videos. But yeah, like it's kind of hard like to like see how like your views actually like convert into sales.
Yeah, it's a perennial problem. I agree. We hear that a lot. And then obviously you're a really gifted inventor. Like you came up with these cool recipes on your kitchen table. You made them work. But that's a very different skill set to the skill set that's involved when you're building a business. So understanding things like cash flow and doing your accounts and, you know, submitting and worrying about various taxes and so forth. So how did you learn that stuff? And do you feel like you're naturally good with numbers or that you've been able to create that muscle over time?
So to be honest with you, I really suck at math. It's definitely not my strength at all, and numbers cause me an insane amount of anxiety. But I mean, as a business owner, I can't just like completely ignore numbers. Like we need to make sure that like our cash flow is positive and we're not overspending. So I'm able to like look into our accounts, see what's going on, and have like a general picture and like make decisions based on like what I see generally. But we have a bookkeeper. She's really great, and she's able to do profit and loss reports for us every month. So she's kind of able to like give me the big picture, and then from there I analyze and make the decisions based on like the numbers she does.
Okay, amazing. And how big is the business now? So are we talking kind of international sales? Are we talking kind of month on month, year on year growth? Like, tell me where you're at in terms of the success so far.
So to be honest, because it's a food product, it's actually a lot harder than you would think to expand. At the beginning, I wanted to do worldwide shipping, and that was a mistake because a lot of like countries, if you don't have the proper paperwork to ship food, they're just gonna ship it back or like dispose of the parcel. So we actually lost quite a bit of money because of that. That was me not doing my research and just jumping right into it like a lot of business owners do. So right now we're, most of our sales are Canada, and like we're getting into the US. Like we're fully certified for the US. We have all of like our paperwork. We're able to ship things. Everything's able to clear customs properly. But right now it's really Canada and US.
But that's a really big market. I mean, if you become like a household name in the US and Canada, that's an enormously successful business right there.
Yeah. So eventually I would like to like ship our stuff to Europe though, because especially the UK, we have a lot of people asking, but just right now, like probably like for like next year, it would be more feasible. But for right now, it's going to be Canada, US. And we haven't really penetrated the US market like the way I would have liked to right now. So we're still like phase expand to US.
Well, on that subject, it costs quite a lot of money to expand because you've got to do marketing, you've got to have salespeople. So how have you, this is a leading question because I know you're on Dragon's Den. So how did you finance the growth of your startup and how was that experience for you?
So we actually never put any money into the company, and we didn't end up taking the deal from the Dragon. So they offered it to us and we didn't take it. Yeah. So a little bit of a plot twist. I mean, it's been good because we've been able to like reinvest all of our profits back into the business and like still remain profitable. But yeah, like, I mean, we pretty much just like go with the flow. In terms of like spending. But now, since we're trying to enter the US, we are spending a bit more than we have previous years, like on marketing and like sales and stuff like that. So like, this is like the year where like, it's kind of gonna like either boom or not work, but I'm pretty sure it's gonna expand. And also like, on another note, before, like in terms of like productions, because we still produce everything in-house, we didn't really have like the production capabilities or the facility to actually even be able to sell for like the numbers we would have wanted to. And now just this year we have everything like in place to like support like a huge growth.
Does that mean you've got your own manufacturing facilities now, or do you mean that you found a good contract manufacturer that you can rely on to create the products?
So we have all of our own manufacturing facilities. I actually tried to reach out to a lot of manufacturers. And because like it's not like a simple product to manufacture, like let's say like somebody's making cookies, like all of these manufacturers are set up to make cookies, but like this is like such a new product and like they don't know, like, no one really wants to get into it. So, like, I had to, like, learn about food manufacturing and set up our own facility here. We actually, we were able to purchase, like, a building with the profits from the company. And, like, that's where we do everything. So we have, like, our offices upstairs and downstairs is a production.
That's amazing. And you're so humble about all this. You're like, oh, yeah, we just managed to get our own manufacturing facility. But that's enormous that you own this building and you're making everything yourself and you're not reliant on anyone else in the supply chain to create the bombs for you. That means you're in control of your own destiny.
Yeah, exactly. And that's actually really, really good. Like, I'm really grateful that, like, we're able to produce everything here.
So back to the dragon. So that was interesting because I do know that something like a third of the entrepreneurs who accept funding on Dragon's Den, I think that it doesn't end up, they don't end up doing the deal. It cuts to the term sheet stage and things get complicated and it doesn't happen. But do you still think that it was a really positive experience just for the publicity? Like, and what else did you get out of it?
Well, first of all, the publicity that you get after being on Dragon's Den is absolutely incredible. So anyone that's, like, thinking of doing it and, like, is like, oh, I don't know if I want to give up a share of my company, like, literally just do it, go on the show, and then after decide if you want to give up a share of your company. Like, it's okay not to. Like, people can change their mind or whatever. And also, for being on the show, I think, like, as, like, an entrepreneur, it was a really good, like, learning experience to be able to, like go in front of, like, leading experts, like, in business, present my ideas, present, like, my product, and actually have them like it and give me positive feedback about everything. Like, it was very, very, like valorizing. Like, I felt, like, really, like, good about it, good about myself. Like, it was a really confidence boost experience, you could say.
And when you say the publicity was great, can you tell me a bit about how that manifested? Was it just like loads of hits to the website, or did you see a big uplift in sales? Like, what was the impact, the material impact?
So definitely the day that it airs and like a bit after, I would say for like a good 2 weeks, because they also play like previews of it like on TV, there's a huge boost in sales. Also, we do a lot of wholesale, so there was a huge boost in like wholesale accounts, just people that saw us on Dragon's Den. And also, I feel like it really helps build trust with an audience, especially us, where like the product is not like we're not selling something basic, like, I don't know, like a cookie or whatever. Like, people have to be like, okay, why would I want to buy a cocktail bomb? Like, what's the point? So to have like people like that other, like, to have like the dragons who people trust say like, I love this product, this is great, like, people want to buy it, like, because of that. Like, it really gives us like a good like boost in trust. And also I feel like the whole like Dragon's Den thing too, it really puts me like as a leader in my industry. So like, even if somebody like decides to start like their own business, like, or like copy the product, whatever, like, I was the first, like, I'm like kind of considered like the first to market, because like we were on like Dragon's Den and everything. So
it's like the alternative patent, basically. If you can't afford a patent, go on Dragon's Den and show everyone that you're the inventor of this thing, because then the millions will know.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how it, like, it's great. Like, it was great, definitely. And like, also like people love to watch that too. Like, even to just repost the videos, like, people love, like, a good Dragon's Den or, like, Shark Tank episode.
For more tips and tricks, head over to sage.com/podcasts, where you'll have access to a treasure trove of free resources that can help you grow and hone your business. Tell me a bit about confidence, because it takes a lot of confidence as an entrepreneur to pitch just in a room with one other person, let alone when you know that your pitch is going to be aired on national television. So are you a very confident person? Has that been something that has evolved over time? How did you pep yourself up for that recording? Tell me about your confidence and where it comes from.
Yeah, so when I signed up for the show, I didn't think that they were gonna take me. I was like, I'm just gonna sign up for fun and we'll see what happens. Like, I didn't wanna get my hopes up. And finally, they ended up taking me, and I was so nervous, you have no idea. So I rehearsed that pitch for like a month before. I rehearsed all my answers. I learned everything that they could ask from in and out. I watched all the episodes. I was like, okay, I was writing down the questions, like, okay, they might ask this, they might ask that. And you're in there for an hour too, so you don't know what they could ask you. Like, they're gonna ask you everything and anything, like, about your business. But to be honest, right before, like, I was about to enter, like, you know, when you do the walk, I was, like, crying backstage because I was so nervous. And all of the production team was like, go, go, you can do it. You're going to be so good. And I was like, no, I can't do it. But finally, I went, and I don't know, like, where my confidence came, but it just, like, overtook me, and I just did my pitch, and it went super well. But my biggest fear too going on the show is, like, we have, like, a food-based product, right? So, like, even though a lot of people like it, like, sometimes you see food-based products on, like, on Dragon's Den, and they're like, ugh, this is not good. And then it's like, well, what do I do? Like, even though your numbers are good, your feedback is good, like, if the dragons don't like it, like what can you say? Like, oh my god, they don't like my product. But finally, they were all like, it tastes great, this is amazing. So I was really lucky for that. But I mean, like, other than, like, the fact that, like, I look super confident, like, on the show and everything, like, I would say, like, in general, I'm not really, like, a confident person. Like, I'm often, like, very stressed and, like, anxious about, like, my ideas and, like, whether or not they're good and, like, what people are gonna think. So, like, I'm a lot, like, in my head, even though, like, on the outside, it kind of shows that, like, I'm, like, confident and all.
That is so interesting, because I've watched you, I've watched that episode of Dragon's Den, and my overall, like, my takeaway was that you were super confident, super calm, very poised, eloquent, like, you know, butter wouldn't melt. And it was like, wow, that's so impressive, because she's a young woman, you know, and this is a really terrifying thing. And even me in my dotage, I would find that very frightening. So that's interesting that you feel like you're kind of masking a lot of what's going on behind.
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't like to show, like, as much, like, how stressed I am about everything. Even though, like, I think it's good to show now, because people actually like to see, like, the real you. Yeah. But yeah, like, I mean, like, I feel like I go through a lot of, like, emotional cycles, like, where I'm, like, stressed and everything. And then, like, when it's, like, time to, like, do the show and, like, time to get into it, like, then I'll kind of, like, get, like, a boost of confidence in myself. So it's, like, it's kind of weird, like, how things work. But, yeah.
Do you reflect on successes, though? Like, do you celebrate when you have a record month or record quarter? Like, do you take the time to almost pat yourself on the back a bit and say, hey, I did this? Or is that just not part of your routine?
So, I mean, it should be, because, like, I think it's good to, like, reward yourself and, like, think about, like, you know, your successes. But I think I'm, like, the type of person that, like, I always, like, want to, like, push further. So I'm like, oh no, like, what's going on? And then I'm like, I don't really, like, take us time to, like, reflect on, like, what I've done good. I'm, like, more focused on, like, how can I do better? And I think that that's not necessarily a good thing, because, like, it just causes, like, more stress and, like, more pressure on myself. And, like, I always feel like I'm, like, not really good enough, or, like, oh, like, why aren't we growing faster than this? Or, like, oh, like, today was not a good day. Like I'm the type of person too, like, let's say, like, we have a bad day, like, in sales, I'll be like, oh my god, today was, like, the worst day ever, like, this business is done, like, this is the end of my life, like, that's how I am. I'm like, okay, it's finished, we're done, like, Cocktail Bomb Shop is over today. And then, like, I'll, like, look at the month and I'll be like, well, we had, like, a crazy wholesale month, like, oh no, like, we're actually doing good, like, we're positive, like, most businesses are not even, like, positive cash flow. And then I'm like, okay, like, maybe I shouldn't, like, focus on, like, the little things and, like, look at the big picture.
I think that's great advice for anyone listening, because I think sometimes it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? That sort of single-minded focus, determination, like, focus on the negative, that actually can help you go really far, because you do, like, keep trying to excel, trying to push beyond, you know, the original goal, or, you know, try and push yourself. But then, yeah, then you have the flip side, which is that, you know, it's a stressful and anxiety-ridden way to live. So it's kind of the two sides that you've got to live in balance with. But it's great advice that you should sort of try not to focus too much on the negative and try and look at the bigger picture sometimes, rather than getting swallowed by something bad that's happened in that day or that week. And talking to you and looking at all you've achieved in your career, it's really clear that you are super driven, and, you know, the fact that you were just like, yeah, cool, I'm going to give this a go. Tell me about how you became this kind of person, like where your drive came from. So what's your background like? Do you have entrepreneurs in your family? Do you feel like you've had role models that have sort of pushed you in this way? Tell me how you've become this very, very driven person.
Yeah, so almost everybody in my family is an entrepreneur. So it started with my grandfather who opened, what he did was he started selling cookware sets, like pots and pans, from door to door in Ottawa, like in the 1940s or 50s, something like that. And finally, he ended up opening a kitchen store in Ottawa, and it was like super successful. And he gave it to my mom. So my mom took over it after when he was older, and I kind of like grew up in my mom's store. So like I would help her like sell stuff. I would help her like place merchandise. She would show me the new products. So I always like was really interested in like business and all that. And my stepfather, who's like my dad, he is a sales rep. So he represents a bunch of different companies for wholesalers. So he like has his own sales agency. So I would like go with him on the road to go visit his customers. And he would like show me what was doing. He would show me the catalog. So I was always like looking at like new products, new things. He would receive samples. I would think it was like the coolest thing. And I would always like in the back of my mind, like think like, oh, it would be really cool. Like if I could like have like a business, sell something, but I never really knew what. So it kind of just came naturally after that. But I think like being around entrepreneurs, like especially like in my early like childhood, was really beneficial to me being an entrepreneur today, because like I think like I didn't really know any different also. So
that makes total sense, because once you see someone else doing it, you're like, well, of course I could do that. I think sometimes we underestimate the power of role models. And so I imagine, is your family super proud of all you've achieved? Because it must be just amazing watching you build this huge and successful business.
Yeah, they're definitely really, really proud. My mom and my dad actually sell the bombs today, like at different like events. So like they'll do like shows and stuff, and they'll like set up a booth and everything. And they just have like a lot of fun. Like they love talking about the story, selling the product, and yeah.
And talk to me about sustainability, because I read that you have, I think it's biodegradable, recyclable wraps and packaging. Tell me about that journey. Was it tricky to do, number one? And two, like, why was that important to you?
So when I first started the company, I said I want to like try and make it as eco-friendly as possible, because I felt like, why would you start a business and like not make it eco-friendly? Like it didn't make sense in my head. And after I'm going to talk about that. So I was like, I have to wrap them like for hygiene reasons. So I had to find a wrap that was biodegradable or recyclable. And I was able to source pretty easily a biodegradable shrink wrap. So I was super happy about that. And also I was like, well, I'm just going to put them in a cardboard box. And plus like the cardboard that I'm going to use is going to be good for shipping. So like they'll be safe during transport. So it was pretty easy for me to get like all of these sustainable things. But if you want to know something that's like really sad, the second I started doing shows and stuff in the US, my main thing that people were gonna, that they told me was, why is it in a cardboard box? You should be able to see the product.
Oh.
Yeah, so I have this theory that like, as much as like businesses are ready for sustainability, because let's say like my cardboard box, it's actually cheaper than a plastic box in terms of cost. So I think businesses are ready for like a sustainable change. But I think, like, the consumers are not there.
Yeah. They want to be wowed by what's inside. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I think, like, a consumer thinks that it takes away from their experience to have it in, like, a cardboard box. They're like, well, the box looks cheap. But, like, even though, like, it's printed on, like, it's as nice as it can be, like, well, why is it not plastic? Like, you should be able to see through. Like, things should be transparent. So yeah, like that's my theory on like sustainability. So
what was your reaction when customers were saying, we want to see the product? Were you tempted to get a box with a window, or were you like, no, I'm going to stick to my guns, the market will catch up eventually?
So what happened is I was able to source a recyclable box. So I have a box with a window. It's only for wholesale, because I ordered a small quantity because I wanted to see like if like that was really the issue. So basically, it's really funny, but my stores in Canada, they want nothing to do with the box with the window. And our stores in the US, they prefer the box with the window. So it's like, I don't know if it's like the markets, but yeah, like at least it's recyclable. But eventually, like, I'm hoping that like we can like be 100% like cardboard. So
yeah. And that was interesting that you just sort of found a biodegradable shrink wrap really easily. Did you just go on Google or something? Like, what do people do when you're trying to find packaging? Do you have to go to like a supplier and ask what they have, or what's the route to finding the right thing?
So it's not really that easy to find a biodegradable shrink wrap, honestly. I had to like do like a lot of research because most of the shrink wraps are actually not even recyclable. Like if you put them in the recycling, it like scraps the whole recycling bin. So I just did a big like Google search. I started contacting people, emailing, calling, and like also at that point too, like no one knew who I was. So I was like, hi, I want to buy some shrink wrap. And they're like, okay, like we're like, no. So I got turned down a lot, but finally I was able to find a company and they sold to me, and actually we still use their shrink wrap today. So it's good for them to have sold to me in the beginning.
Yes. And you're going to be a very valuable customer. So it's good they took a chance. And when you talk about coming back from hearing the word no, I mean, that's what we've heard. We hear a lot from entrepreneurs that you have to get used to being turned down flat. You have to get used to people saying that idea is not going to work. No, we're not going to sell your product. No, we're not going to supply you. That takes a lot of resilience. So talk to me about resilience. How have you become such a resilient person?
So before, like when people would tell me no, like I would get really upset and I would like just cry. Yeah, because that's how I am. But now, when someone tells me no, I'm like, I have it in my head. I'm like, oh, well, you're going to see one day. So it's like, I kind of like, I feel like now I kind of turn like my sadness into like motivation when hearing the word no. And I'm like, well, they're just going to like, they're going to want the product eventually, or they're going to want to sell to me eventually, because I've actually seen it. There was suppliers when I started that didn't want to sell to me. They were like, well, we don't do that type of volume. Actually, I don't know if we have time, but maybe this is a really funny story.
Yeah, we've got time. Tell me.
Do you know Staples?
Yes.
Okay, so at Staples, they have a printing center. And basically, I didn't know where to print my stickers and my cards for my boxes when I first started. So I go to Staples, I go to the cash and everything. They were charging me like a fortune, like something like 50 cents for a sticker, like ridiculous prices. And I was like, oh, I see that you guys have like a business account. Like, I would really love to open a business account. And the girl, she looks at me and she's like, you don't have the type of volume for a business account. Like, this is not serious. Like, we're not opening you a business account. And I was like, okay. And I was like kind of hurt. And then my boyfriend, he was like, screw this, we're gonna call a bunch of printing companies. And I was sad too. I was like, no, like we have no choice, we have to buy like regular people, no one cares about us. And then he calls a bunch of printers, and like we like dropped our costs like crazy to like maybe like at that time like maybe like 20 cents a sticker. So now I don't even want to go back to Staples, because like we actually have better suppliers than Staples. So it was actually kind of good that they told me no also. But yeah, like at that time I was sad, but now anyways, I'm like, Staples, I could have been a really good customer, but you guys refused me, so.
Yeah, it's your loss, Staples. You heard it here. You almost had Cocktail Bomb Shop's business, but you lost out.
Yeah.
And then finally, Kian, I want to hear what's next. So have you got new flavors coming through? You've got any different kind of products coming through? Like, what is in your plan for the next year, the next 5 years? Like, give me a sneak peek at your goals for the future.
Yeah, so right now the name of the company is Cocktail Bomb Shop. And I really grew the brand, like with the Dragon's Den and everything. But one of the problems with the fact that the name of the company is Cocktail Bomb Shop is people just think that we sell cocktail bombs. So in the mistake, a mistake that I made in the beginning, I think, was like calling the company something that's like maybe too product specific. Mm. So eventually, well, actually in the near future, I want to start like another brand which sells like all of the other cocktail products we have. So we have rimmers, we have edible glitter. I wanna do cocktail syrups eventually, like just glasses, like a bunch of different cocktail related things. And I've already started working on it. It's gonna be called Sucre. So that's my project, and we're gonna also leave Cocktail Bombshell because it's a brand that people know, they come back to, we have a lot of repeats. So yeah, so that's my project for now. And in terms of like the bombs themselves, like we're constantly coming up with new flavors, like different cocktail ideas, cocktails that don't exist. So that's pretty much my plan. Like I want to stay in the cocktail space, but I want to like be able to get like a larger market of like cocktail related products and not just the bombs.
And are you still the innovator? Are you still the one that's designing these cocktail bombs? Like, are you still like the Willy Wonka character in your kitchen, like throwing these things together? Or do you have a team that does like research and development for you?
Yeah, so now we have a team that like actually like produces them and finds the ideas. But like, of course, like if I have like an idea, like, okay, like let's do I'm trying to think of a flavor we don't have. Okay, like a lychee cocktail bomb. Like they'll like all like help out and like give like, okay, we could do this, we could do that, we could do this. Okay, like maybe let's do with that flavor. But like they do a lot more of like the research and like the actual testing of the products than I do now.
Okay. And I know I said that was my last question, but I actually have a couple more, which is how big is your team and how have you found progressing from like a solo founder to being like a manager and a leader of people?
So now let me count. So in production, we're five in production at all times. When it gets super busy, we hire more people to help out. And upstairs, this is new this year, we actually have like professional employees and we're five upstairs, like creating content, doing email marketing, paid ads, different things like that. So we're about 10 now. Yeah.
And the leadership side, how do you find that managing people?
Well, right now, all of the people that we have are like really, really good and like really, really nice. So there's definitely no issues managing them, to be honest with you. But we have had like employees or people that we like brought into our team that were a bit more problematic. And I think like we had to let go of them because like it just wasn't working and they were like bringing everyone down in the team. So I think like if somebody comes into our team that's like doesn't fit with our like vibe or like our culture or like isn't working and is like making everyone like not be able to do their job, like we're not going to hesitate to like let them go.
That's really interesting because that can take a long time before leaders realize that there's like an individual that's like poisoning the well slightly. So you seem to be very quick to spot those individuals, which is really good, which is really healthy for an organization. And finally, Kiana, what would be your top tip for anyone who is thinking about starting a business or maybe in the very early stages? What one thing do you wish you'd known when you were getting started that you could share?
So I think maybe it would be like to just get into it. Like I see a lot of people, they're there, they're writing a business plan. They're trying to plan things. They're like, okay, like I need to get money, whatever, to start my business. Like I feel like they're too invested in the plan and not like on the action. So because they just never do like any action, nothing ends up ever happening. And like I literally see this all the time. Like people tell me like, oh, I'm gonna start a business, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that. They don't do anything. Like it's like I don't think they're ever gonna do anything because they're too much involved in their plan. But like let's say like even you have like this crazy idea that you need like $100 million to like start it up. Like literally just post a video of you talking about the idea. Like, hey, does anyone want to invest? Like, maybe you're going to get somewhere. But, like, by doing nothing and just planning it in your head, you're not going to get anywhere. And also, I mentioned it before, but, like, when naming your business, like, maybe try and name it something that is, like, not product specific. So you can, like, easily expand. Like, that's definitely my mistake. Like, I didn't do any research and, like because I didn't think it was going to grow where it grew. I didn't really do any like branding, like our brand colors, like we don't really have any, like our stuff is like not consistent, I find, like in terms of like branding and stuff. So I'm trying to make it now, but yeah, like definitely like the only thing, like if you should research is just like come up with like a name that's like kind of generic and just like do your brand colors and your typographies, like that's it. But you can do that on Canva for free, so.
It's great advice. You heard it from Kiana Gomez. Don't pigeonhole yourself, right? Have a good catch-all umbrella name for your brand, and two, execute. Don't just stick to the planning stage. That's yeah. Great. Kiana, you've been an absolutely fantastic guest. Thank you so much for making the time.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. As always, the show notes are available over at sage.com/podcast, along with a wealth of other resources to help you build your business. If you want to try a cocktail bomb, check out cocktailbombshop.ca or check out Instagram and TikTok for Kiana's latest posts. If you loved this episode, let us know on the socials using the hashtag soundadvicepodcast. See you soon for more sound advice.